Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
What's up, everybody? You are watching slash listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
And I'm DJ, coming over from the Jumbo Commander YouTube channel.
How's it? Hello. Greetings, everyone. This is episode 404. Error 404, system failure. I can't believe we made it to 404. And it's very apt because today we are talking about game enders, things that really do end the things on the spot. And spoiler alert, did you see Game Nights with Post Malone? Because he cast a game ender in that one.
Totally. And so we're going to take a look at those game ending cards. But before we do,
time to talk about our sponsors. That's right, cardgame.com/command zone. If you want to get a game ender for yourself, have it in your hand, put it into a sleeve and into a deck, and then play it against an opponent, you're going to have to buy the card. So go to cardgame.com/command zone. That's our affiliate link. Once you type it in, you're on the website. Everything is the exact same as it would be otherwise, except you're on the beautiful website and you're supporting your favorite podcast or one of your favorite podcasts and buying the cards that you need, most importantly, for the decks that you want to play and destroy your opponents with, or maybe a gift for a friend, because maybe I'll buy you a game ender, DJ, if I think that you deserve it.
Oh, thanks.
You can also check out Ultra Pro while you're there or at your local game store. Don't forget, supporting your local game store is just as important, especially as we come out of this pandemic and stores, I know, are hurting. It's a very tough business to be in. The margins are very small, and your patronage to those shows is as important as your patronage to ours. And of course, speaking of patrons, you can find up at patreon.com/command zone to find a way to support the show. And we shout out one lucky viewer every single week. So this week's episode is dedicated to
Dhruv Seth.
Dhruv, really cool name.
You rock. Thanks, bud.
You rock. You rock. All right, error 404. It is time for this system to fail because the game has ended.
Bum, bum, bum.
Wah, 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 wah. We're crashing the system. We're talking about some of the best ways to win card games in Magic the Gathering. But first, let's talk about how we're going to qualify today's candidates for the best game enders in Commander. So, DJ, what is a game-ending card?
Yeah, I think it's a card that covers a really wide spectrum. You say, like, well, what wins a game of Commander? And a lot of times, you can just kind of point to your deck and be like, well, I don't know, just like I do my thing and
creatures attack,
I win the game. Yeah. But there are sometimes cards that you include that are designed to go over the top, to really take over a game with a single card. And, like, we were inspired by the episode of Game Nights where Posty played a Rise of the Dark Realms.
Yeah.
Just played that card, and it is this over the top insane card, 9 mana, brings all the creatures back basically. And so it's this card that like needs to be answered immediately. And a lot of times it's a single card that does it. And so you can include these in your deck and know, you know, somewhere in my deck, there's a card that can just win the game if I can resolve it.
Yeah, back in the early days of the podcast, we used to mention cards like Insurrection as our big game enders. But these days, it's gotten a little bit tougher to make that as powerful as some of the cards we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, and I think that also, like, when you're thinking about game enders, a lot of the times they don't always reliably end the game. Like, yes. You're talking about Insurrection, and it's like, well, there's a fail case in that you know, card.
There's you're ready to play it, someone, all of them, someone right? board wipes. Where are your creatures you're going to steal?
Uh-oh. Yeah. Every single card that we're going to talk about today has a fail case. You know, there's a situation where it just doesn't actually in the game. And these game enders can be pretty problematic in your deck because Arise of the Dark Realms costs 9 mana.
Yeah, you don't want that in your opening hand nor in your hand the first 5 or 6 turns. You saw when Posty cast it, he waited till the very last moment where he was like, this is the final time that I need to do this. And when he did, it really made a big difference.
Hopefully your game ender is at the very last moment of the game.
Yeah, because some of them win on the spot. Some game enders we'll talk about do take a little bit of time to grind out the opponents to win. But in general, if these are left untouched or uninteracted with, they will render you dead and useless and they'll completely wreck you.
I think it's important not to oversaturate your deck with this because we mentioned 8 mana, 9 mana. You don't want too many of these effects in here, but one or two could be really interesting. And I think that having one or two, not only can it have this big, powerful commandery effect, because that's fun, right?
That's commander.
Like, this is one of the only formats where you can play these big, over-the-top game-ending spells. And so embrace that. Have those cool cards in there. But also,
don't take them out if you like are afraid either. This is I think a big problem with a lot of newer players and myself too sometimes, where I'm like, well, I don't want to play another Crater Hoof Behemoth in my deck. But guess what? Magic is a game that ends when everyone else but one player dies, usually. So that means it's okay to win, and it's okay to include game enders in your deck, and it's okay to not feel bad about ending the game, because trust me, there are some games where I pass the turn and go, can you end the game, please? Because I can't, and I am not having as much fun. Please, someone end the game.
Yeah, soon. Sometimes you just need games to end. And also, one thing that you can do is you can adjust your game ender to your meta.
Yeah,
you know, there's totally. there's a difference between some of these game enders, which are very competitive, very powerful, very high end, you know, cards, versus something that you can play in your own meta. So you can have game enders that stick to your power level.
Yes, absolutely, and also match what your opponents are going to be, you know, not upset with, because at the end of the day, playing Magic, it's about everyone wanting to have fun and enjoying a group activity, and winning shouldn't have a warping or toxic effect over that experience. So if you're like mass land destruction, like, you know, that's not how you're supposed to win games.
Yeah, so
also,
that's why
it'll make people unhappy.
That's why we're going to talk about our favorite game enders, give you some suggestions from each of these categories, and help us sort of analyze it so that you can find your own game ending cards too.
Yep, absolutely. And of course, there's going to be tons of exceptions along the way, but don't worry about those. Let's just worry about the ones that we talk about and have some fun with it, because we're going to be ending the game on episode 404. Let's go.
Let's kill some people.
The first way we've categorized this as powerful and popular.
Yeah, game enders can sometimes be really popular, really ubiquitous. You see them in a lot of commander decks. You just mentioned Crater of Behemoth. It's killed more people than a lot of other big pigs around.
Oh, yeah.
So just as an example, I think we've chosen the card Expropriate.
Yep, we talk about this card quite a bit on the show, and I think it's got like a 98% win rate whenever I've seen it cast in the game. Almost always casting this leads to the end of the game, unless it's countered, of course. Expropriate is 7 blue-blue for a sorcery, and it says Council's Dilemma on it. Starting with you, the player that's casting it, each player votes for time or money. And at the end of it, you count it up. How many people voted time? How many people voted money? For each time vote, take an extra turn after this one. For each money vote, choose a permanent owned by the voter and gain control of it, and then you exile Expropriate. So this card is a house. It will often give you minimum at least one turn, because you'll be choosing time, and then past that you'll be taking permanents from other people, and with those extra turns and the permanents you steal, this should be enough for you to take over the game, knock people out, and just establish such a strong control that no one's going to come back and be able to beat you.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking a lot about gaining resource advantage, like, you know, multiple cards for the one card that you spend, and also the time in order to utilize those. Remember that stealing something from an opponent is better than you think, because you are denying them the resource and giving it to you. So stealing something from an opponent is automatically a 2-for-1. And when you have a 2-for-1 for 3 opponents, that's a 6-for-1, and you get the extra turn to use that stuff. So that's why Expropriate is so powerful. It's a 6-for-1 that gives you the time to be able to use it. 9 mana is a lot, but a lot of times you're gaining way more than 9 mana worth of value. You know, immediately subtract, you know, 5 mana for that extra turn, and then you think of all the things that you're stealing, and you realize that
you can also untap and use all your mana again. So even if you tap out for Expropriate, you got that turn minimum, because you can always vote for time yourself.
Yeah.
By the way, you never vote for time if you are not the person casting Expropriate, because getting more turns is
What if you just want the game to end, Jimmy?
Oh, gosh. Then give them all the time in the world and just be like, all right, cool. Here's the stuff. You know how I'm going to block. I'm out of here. I'm going to go get a drink.
All right, Jimmy. So what is your, that's our example of expropriate, breaking it down, finding out why expropriate is so powerful. Jimmy, what's your powerful and popular game ender?
Mine is one that is actually quite, it's getting a little bit up there in price because I think people are realizing just how good it is. And it actually has the kind of a word for end in it. It's Finale of Devastation.
Yeah, over $30.
Yeah, yeah. It's up there. And, you know, this card is amazing because it has a lot tacked onto it. So it's X green, green for a sorcery. You search your library and or graveyard for a creature card with converted mana cost X or less and put it onto the battlefield. If you search your library this way, shuffle it. If X is 10 or more, so now you're feeding 12 mana into this thing, creatures you control get plus X, and gain haste until end of turn.
That just wins the game, right?
Yeah, it should win the game. Now, obviously, you need some creatures out on the battlefield, but they're going to get minimum plus 10 if you're paying X into this, is 10 or more. And the best part about this is that you get to search your library and or your graveyard for a creature card, and you're tutoring it onto the battlefield. So a lot of times, you know, if you're only looking for your library, it's a bit tougher. What if they got rid of your game ender, you had to discard it to a wheel? Now, Finale of Devastation says, hey, look everywhere. This is also a shuffle effect, by the way, because you could pay just green for this and shuffle your deck because you can look through your library and your graveyard. But really, this is a cool game ender. I just love big spells that give your creatures tons of power and in this case also haste and blammo. When they strike in for that alpha strike, your opponents will be looking for their next deck to play.
You know, one thing that's good about this card is that a lot of the game enders that we're talking about, they're like they win the game or they rot in your hand or they do nothing.
Right.
Jimmy's game ender actually is pretty useful just by casting it to get a utility creature or something.
Yeah, you
like
could
that.
Cast it for X is equal to 5 and just get a sick 5 drop out of your graveyard or deck
too.
Yeah,
so like the flexibility on this is on this game ender is crazy. It means they can go in a ton of different decks.
Yeah, and now that we're talking about also just crashing in with a ton of power and killing people, we wanted to give a quick shout out to another powerful and popular game ender for Craig Blanchett, which is Triumph of the Hordes. Gives everything +2/+2 trample and of course infect.
Yeah. Actually, like in similar theme, like the newest cards from Strixhaven, I've kind of wanted Surge to Victory. I haven't done it yet, but I want that to be a game ender, that's similar to some of these like Anthem effects where you give your creatures a big boost and try to get a bunch of
them.
So I'm hoping that'll
Surge to Victory, you're exiling an instant or sorcery, and then our creatures get plus X, where that card is that mana value. And then if they deal combat damage, you can play the casted the exiled card. So you can just cast something over and over and over
again.
I'm
hoping that's my
that's cool.
Ender.
I like
But here's the thing. Like those aren't, that's not popular yet. Yet. It will be popular.
Oh, okay.
But let's talk about another really popular effect that is pretty powerful. It's Torment of Hailfire.
Classic.
Yeah. X black for sorcery. Repeat the following process X times. Each opponent loses 3 life unless that player sacrifices an online permanent or discards a card.
Okay.
So if you put enough mana into this, your opponents just don't have enough resources, enough cards or permanents, and they just keep taking 3 damage and they die.
Yeah, or they sacrifice so many of their non-land permanents and discards their entire hand that they may be at a high life total, but their board is completely decimated and the Hailfire has just taking apart everything that they have in front of them.
Yeah, so this is a thing where, you know, Jimmy's had a use case for 5 mana, he said. The use case for Torment of Hailfire is not great at like 5 mana because then people could just very easily be like, all right, I take 9. And you've done 9 damage, but you haven't gotten that game-ending 2-for-1 value. You need to reach the level where you're getting resources out of their hand, getting things off the battlefield, or just killing them for this to actually be a game-ender. So a lot of these, we're seeing that a lot of these effects cost a lot of mana to be able to pull off.
Yeah, it costs a lot of mana, but once you pass that certain threshold, I think if X is equal to 6 or 7, you're getting to the point where, depending on where you're at in the game, people will just not be able to keep up. So this is a game-ender that doesn't necessarily win on the spot, but a lot of times will make everyone's board so weakened to the state where you are just able to, you know, on your next turns take over.
Yeah, I think ideally you win on the spot if you pump enough mana into this.
Totally.
But I think that if you just don't quite get there, you still might actually get there by the 2-for-1 value.
And the nice thing about Torment of Hailfire is it's in black and mono black, and black has a lot of ways to double their mana. So getting up to that big critical mass of mana to cast this is pretty easy.
All right, let's talk about our next category, which is over-the-top advantage.
You know?
So we are already talking about, we're seeing a theme going on here where you need like 5-for-1s and 6-for-1s. Those are the ones that are really generating a lot of winning potential.
Mm-hmm.
Also things that have a big effect. So usually they cost a lot of mana, you know,
yeah.
Or they have an effect that's bigger than the mana that you put into it.
Yeah.
So if we look at some effects that are sort of over the top card advantage, over the top mana advantage, we can hopefully get some of that power level out of that. I think that one of the best examples has got to be Bolas's Citadel.
Yeah, so this is a relatively new card. It is one that has a lot of text on it, but every single line of text allows you to get that over the top. Holy moly, look at what this player just did. 3 black for a legendary artifact. You can look at the top card of your library at any time, but more importantly, you can play the top card of your library, and if you cast a spell this way, you, instead of paying the mana cost, you pay life equal to its mana value rather than the mana cost. So that's incredible. You can essentially, for as much life as you have, cast things off the top of your library over and over and over again, sometimes playing lands as well. And you can play, 5, 6, 7 cards off of Bolas's Citadel on the turn that it lands, because you can spend the mana for it and then get that over-the-top advantage by just casting things over and over again. And just finally,
life is a resource. Use it.
Yeah, you can tap the Citadel to sacrifice 10 non-land permanents, and each opponent loses 10 life. So that could be the finisher that you need as well. After you dump all this stuff onto the table, Bolas's Citadel being an artifact, you can tap at the same turn it comes in, drain everyone for 10, and blammo.
Yeah, playing cards off the top of your library is card advantage. It's like you're drawing those cards and then playing mm-hmm. them. So those are the extra cards that you're getting. Being able to use your life as a resource instead of mana is cheating mana. So extra cards, extra mana, and a way to deal damage to close it out, maybe.
That's over the top advantage for sure.
That's over the top advantage for sure.
Not to mention Bolas's Citadel combos extremely well with Sensei's Divining Top, because it's a 1 mana Ooh. Artifact that you can tap to draw a card and put the top on top of your library. If you have both those out, you're paying 1 life to literally draw every single card in your deck until you don't want to draw anymore or don't have enough life.
All right, Jimmy, you want to hear my over the top card that gives me tons of advantage?
I love it.
It's Villainous Wealth.
Ah, yes.
X black, green, blue for a sorcery. Target opponent exiles the top X cards of their library. You may cast any number of spells with converted mana cost X or less from among them without paying their mana cost.
Yowza. So this is so powerful. You get every single spell, and oftentimes if the opponent's deck has a lot of big hitters in there, you're casting all of them.
Yeah, I think you need to sink a lot of mana in this, so it's like X is 7, you're casting
minimum
this for 10.
7, I think.
Yeah, you're going 7 cards deep. Hopefully you're not hitting that many lands. You're hitting big spells and casting them over and over again. If you hit, you know, 4 or 5 spells in there, get to cast all of them, suddenly you're seeing a man advantage and certainly card advantage.
Yeah.
I think that if you're looking for something a little bit more powerful, a little bit more reliable, Genesis Wave is probably a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Because you know what deck you're doing.
Yeah, because you're doing it to your own deck. And so you get the lands too, because the lands come onto the battlefield with Genesis Wave. But Villainous Wealth, there's just something so satisfying about stealing your opponent's things.
I mean, Post Malone literally said that there's nothing better than killing someone else with their own stuff.
There you go.
I agree.
Just said.
I mean, I play Marchesa for that exact same reason. It is really satisfying. And in a lot of ways, you know, it's the same with bribery, right? How can they complain? You use their awesome spells. At least they got to see those spells get used. And that's a fun time for me. So Villainous Wealth, every time I've seen that thing get cast, quite often you're just overwhelming how much happens. And then the opponent that casts it can use those cards on everyone at the table.
Here's the key, though. You can't immediately kill the person that you stole all that stuff from.
No, because if you do, you lose it.
I know. So you Villainous Wealth someone, Jimmy, that he feels horrible because I stole all his stuff, but then he has to sit back and watch as I kill the other two players with it and then finally turn them on him.
All right, my favorite over-the-top advantage is one that I include in a lot of my Spells Matters decks because I still want to cast it and win the game like Josh did on Game Nights one time. It's Mizzix's Mastery. 3 red for a sorcery. Now, just on its face, it says exile target card that's an instant or a sorcery from your graveyard. And for each card exiled this way, I can copy it and cast the copy without paying its mana cost. And then you exile Mizzix's Mastery. However, you can overload this spell for 8 mana. And that means every single instant or sorcery from your graveyard gets exiled and you can cast them all again. You saw how Josh took this to a huge win in his Prismari deck on the Strixhaven episode. This all
a huge win?
A huge win, yeah. Well, kind of. He killed me, that's for sure, and then and cheated,
then,
maybe.
And then flew too close to the sun.
Yeah, he flew a little too close to the sun. Look, in my book, he won that game. because he was able to get rid of all that stuff and cast it all and have a glorious turn. And that's what Mizzix's Mastery does.
It is just so fun. It's over the top like
it
that.
It really is. Yeah. And overload, right? The terminology is right there. It's perfect for it. This card has also made a huge splash in Historic just because by itself, and this if you look at this, is similar to Finale of Devastation. It's good at three in red, and it's really good at five and three red. So you can use it in two different use cases, but so it does never just looks dead in your hand, because you may need to cast it for four and get a cool spell out of your library early or your graveyard earlier. And then later on, when you're able to do five different things, maybe you're in a storm deck, you're able to just create so much value. The Mastery of Mizzix.
Yeah, you definitely need enough spells for this to work, but totally. I love that there's like two uses for it.
Yeah.
And overloading is so much fun.
Yep. And of course, we have to give a special shout out to the over-the-top advantage that everyone has seen recently on Game Nights. Hopefully, if you haven't seen the episode, spoiler alert, but you should go watch it. Post Malone loves Rise of the Dark Realms. He talks about it as early as turn, I think, four or five when Josh wheels it out of his hand. And my goodness, this card, even though I was out of the game, so my graveyard wasn't there, you did the calculations.
I did. I counted it up. So if you see, Jimmy was gone, and Ashlyn only had a single creature in her graveyard.
Okay.
Still, Rise of the Dark Realm got 13 cards of advantage and 52 mana on Posty's side of the battlefield.
Wow. So that is for 9 mana to 52, that's like a 6x pretty much. That's
crazy.
Nuts.
And we're seeing that's how we are evaluating a lot of these cards to see how powerful a game ender they can be is, well, how many cards of advantage do we get and how much mana of advantage that we can get. And we can see that, you know, when you go to these great lengths of getting like 52 mana worth of value, like it's going to end the game.
Yeah, not only that, but it also gave him all of these different options to end the game. And he kind of had to piece it together, which was really fun too, making all these Godsires and using Brutaclad to turn them all into Godsires tokens and then smacking with that. That is really sweet. Like, I love that. Another similar card that we've talked about before on the show quite a bit is Command the Dreadhorde. Mm-hmm. And you're paying life to cast all sorts of different things out of the graveyard. But sometimes you're going to die because you can't. Right, if you do 52 mana value, you're going
to
die.
You can't. It's hard to do 52 mana value. But one thing that's good is they Command the Dreadhorde because it's six. So you can use it a little bit more flexibly. Also, it's 99 cents.
Yeah.
You know, so
great card, by the way.
We're going to talk about budget a little bit later. But a lot of these game enders, they're super fun and powerful cards. So people buy them and play them. So sometimes they're expensive.
Yeah. So take a look at that. Not to mention, if you play Rise of the Dark Realms, you can say that you're as cool as Post Malone. Okay.
I don't think that's true.
Yeah,
I play Rise of the Dark Realms. I know I'm not as cool as Post Malone.
All right, two more face tattoos, a couple of Grammy nominations, and you'll make it.
I need a Grammy nomination, a Super Bowl commercial, and then I'll be cool.
Yeah, if I get a Grammy nomination, I will get a face tattoo. I'm saying it now. I'm never going to get a Grammy nomination, so I never have to worry about that. Okay.
My new goal in life is to get me a Grammy nomination.
I'm just like, who applied on behalf of me?
What? Well, who compiled all of these songs at the beginning of a podcast together?
No! No, don't curse me, DJ. Okay. We're going to talk about one more category before we take a mid-roll break here, and that is stacks. And actually, know what? There actually is no best way to win the game with a stacks deck. That's my opinion about it. It's misery, it's torment, it's pain. And I think when you are up against someone trying to win with stacks and grind you out slowly and make you hate everything, just say you concede. Agree that you got so crushed by that stacks player. They were so cool the way they played that. And then move on with your lives.
So a lot of times stacks decks, you need a lot of little pieces in order to tax your opponents. And so it doesn't really fit the criteria of like a game ending card.
Right.
But in doing research for this, we found out that there are some sort of like things that severely limit your opponent's resources that do kind of win the game, like Cataclysm. Four mana for a sorcery. Each player chooses from among the permanents they control an artifact, a creature, an enchantment, and a land, and sacrifices the rest.
Let's say you have one Eldrazi with Annihilator, and then you cast this card.
Yeah. So there are cards out there that severely limit what your opponents do. They have this taxation, the stacks effect to it.
Mass land destruction, right? Like I've lost games to a very good deck where it's like, all right, now that I have one Eldrazi with Annihilator and I cast a board wipe plus MLD and my Eldrazi stays alive because it's indestructible or whatever. Sorry, goodbye.
We don't have a favorite in this category.
No, there are no favorites because you shouldn't have a favorite either. Don't play stacks. It's awful. You know, unless you're...
Play stacks against a board or a group of people, a meta game that appreciates it and knows how to handle it. Because when someone comes with stacks pieces and you're realizing that like, oh, I can't play my deck, it feels bad. But if someone is playing, you know, stacks across the table from you and you have your own stacks pieces and you have ways to interact with them and like,
and you're
stuff
ready
like that,
for it.
And you're ready for it. Then it definitely becomes like a higher level thinking of Magic. And that's like it's a very fun way to play it, but not everyone enjoys it.
Jimmy, don't enjoy it. Here. Okay. All right. That's going to do it for the first half of this episode. some interesting game enters so far. We're going to dive a little deeper, though, literally in this first category. We're going into the ocean for it. And we're talking about infinite combos as well as creatures that just take over the game. So we'll be right back after a message from our mid-roll sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
All right. Hello, friends. We have returned. We're talking about our favorite game enders on this very special episode 404, Critical Error Failure, of an episode of the Command Zone podcast, and let's get right into it.
Yeah, if you're talking about cards that win the game, these game-ending cards, you should probably look at some cards that just say, win the game.
Literally. That text has been printed on plenty of cards, and turns out some of them are actually very popular and very powerful in competitive formats.
Yeah, let's talk about the sort of example card from this, and that's Thassa's Oracle. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just sees play in tons of different formats, and we know it's really powerful. It's blue for a 1/3 creature merfolk wizard. When Thassa's Oracle enters the battlefield, look at the top X cards of your library, where X is your devotion to blue. Put up to one of them on top of your library and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. Here's the important part. If X is greater than or equal to the number of cards in your library, you win the game.
Right. So Jace, Wielder of Mysteries, Laboratory Maniac, these all care about having basically almost no cards or no cards in your library, and you're winning the game that way. Thassa's Oracle is very similar. This is really cheap to play, right? Blue, you can get it out. Blue is a very powerful color in competitive formats. And this is just going to win the game for you, because a lot of times you find a way to Tainted Pact your entire deck out of there.
Leveler, and then you Thassa's Oracle. You know.
Blammo, no cards in the library. X is Inverter, definitely more than
truth.
That.
You all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, totally.
The reason why this is our example is because it is proven itself. It is everywhere in CDH, everywhere in EDH. People play it all the time. But Jimmy, it's not your favorite, is
no.
it?
No. It's not your favorite either, is it?
No.
I can talk about mine.
Yeah, go for it.
Mine is a card that I'm hoping to build an entire deck around this at some point. It's Approach of the Second Sun. By the way, you'll notice that Nicol Bolas has shown up quite a bit on the Game Enders list.
I know, right?
He's on Approach of the Second Sun. Bolas is Citadel, Tournament of Hailfire. Yeah, he's everywhere. This guy knows how to end it. 6 and a white for a sorcery. If Approach of the Second Sun was cast from your hand and you've cast another spell named Approach of the Second Sun this game, you win the game. Otherwise, put Approach of the Second Sun into its owner's library, 7th from the top, and you gain 7 life. So 7 mana, 7 life, 7th from the top. I like this card a lot because it is a card that does literally nothing the first time you play it, but tells every single person that you're going to try and win the game with it. And it creates kind of like a timer, like a little arch enemy fun thing. And I like seeing this card because if you're playing it in the right shell, you can speed that card draw up and get it back into your hand the next turn sometimes, and I like that challenge. It's like kind of like a fun toolbox. You're like trying to like form a Rubik's Cube in time to win the game. And so things like that that take the win the game scenario and put it on its head a little bit and makes me, the player, have to step through some hoops to figure it out. I like that because typically I'm not a big fan of the cards that say you win the game, because it's just like, oh, it feels cheesy. It feels easy. You're not earning it. But with Approach of the Second Sun, I feel like you're earning it.
Ooh, I actually like the cards that say you win the game on it. Sure. Yeah, like Master Biomancer, or this one that I have. This card is called Revel in Riches. 4 and a black for an enchantment. Whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, create a colorless treasure artifact token with Tap, sacrifice this artifact, add one mana of any color to your mana pool. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you control 10 or more treasures, you win the game.
Yay!
So we've seen, by the way, we've seen a lot of treasure generation in recent sets. Like, it feels like there wasn't very much treasure when this was first printed in Ixalan.
Yeah,
and then they're just like, oh, treasure is a cool mechanic, and it's just been everywhere now.
Yeah, and every color has gotten access to them. Smothering Tithe plus Revelant Riches. I mean, Tireless Provisioner, the new sort of Tireless Tracker card from Modern Horizons 2.
Dockside Extortion. I keep talking about this card and it's so expensive.
I know. I wish they could reprint this in every single commander set. It's very good, obviously, and very good for red.
So but Revelin Riches is like a little bit telegraphed, actually a lot of bit telegraphed, because everyone is literally sitting there counting up your treasures. And if you have, like, you know, all of these treasure creators, you have 10 treasures, people are going to go after you and try to interrupt it. Yep. I do like the fact that this generates value. If you have no treasures on the battlefield and your opponents are just letting their creatures die or trading things away, you get a couple treasures, you get that mana value. So it can actually help you in the mid game, where a lot of these other game enders might just be there for the end of the game.
I like this card too, because it's great with board wipes. Anytime a creature an opponent controls dies, you get a treasure token. So you can wipe the board, and typically it's like board wipes, oh, but you're down 4 or 5 mana. Can you replay stuff out that turn? With Revelin Riches, yeah, you get all those treasures. Or you pass the turn and you have 10 plus and wait for it to get back to you and try and win that way.
Yeah, actually, the only way that I've ever won with Revelin Riches is by pulling off an instant speed board wipe right before my turn. And then I'd be like, aha, I have 10 treasures. And there wasn't enough time for people to deal with it.
That's nice. I like that. So, and at the very minimum, even if this is just out and you find that you have to use your treasures because you're going to die otherwise, at least it's giving you treasure generation, and it's on any creature an opponent controls. It's not non-tokens. It's anytime they die, you get one. Yeah, it's pretty nice. Okay. All right, well, let's talk about our next topic of game enders, and this is the way that I originally learned how to end the game, and that is through infinite combos.
What school of commander were you taught at, Jimmy?
Well, the school,
they're like the game enders that I was taught infinite combo immediately.
Yeah, well, the game enders I was taught was my first commander really that I was serious about was Kiki Jiki. And I didn't realize that at the time, but this is a card that loves to go infinite. And turns out there are a lot of different ways to go infinite in commander. And by infinite, we mean you create a loop or a pattern that when it starts, it can repeat itself. It lets itself redo it over and over again and then leads to a situation where, guess what? You have 36 million copies of Zealous Conscripts. And when they all swing out, that's going to be more than enough to kill your opponents.
Yeah, so we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about these infinite combos because there could be multiple episodes going over these infinite combos. And honestly, these aren't even game-ending cards. These are synergies that you can build into your deck, and combos are usually multiple cards that you can put together. Mm-hmm. And so they're a little bit more complicated and harder for you to use. Like, you can't just be like, oh, I'm going to take these three cards and, you know, find a spot in my deck. Instead, it's a little bit easier to be like, oh, you know what? I'm going to look at my game enders, understand them, and include this one card or something like that.
Because I know that if I can't end the game this way, then this is one of the alternate ways of doing it, which is like Kiki Jiki and Zealous Conscripts. You can make as many copies of Zealous Conscripts as you want. Murderous Redcap in a very early game of Game Knights, Alex Kessler used that to continually re-enter the battlefield over and over again and deal damage to everyone. Mafia style Gatling Gun. Sanguine Bond and Exquisite Blood was sort of like the original, like, wow, what a broken combo. These two cards together.
Two enchantments? Those are hard to interact with.
Wow, and it makes someone lose life and then
only blam, 10 mana?
Everyone dies. Godo and Helm of the Host gives you infinite combat steps. And Niv-Mizzet the Firemind, or one of the other Niv-Mizzets, as well as Ophidian Eye or Curiosity, lets you basically do the Murderous Redcap thing and just beep, 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 all over the board.
So many different combos that we don't really have a favorite. We're not going to shout out anyone in particularly. Just kidding. Jimmy likes Kiki Jiki.
They are hard to interact with, though, because there are ways to play cards like Tooth and Nail, and when you entwine it, you get two creatures out on the board, and that often can be just enough for you to assemble the combo, and how is an opponent going to stop that if they don't counter the original spell?
Yeah, so there you go. Tooth and Nail feels a little bit more like a game-ending card,
even
though it's actually using the combo that's sitting in your deck. So
yes.
That could be basically the way that you get to your combo. If it's a reliable single card, that could be sort of your game-ender if you have a combo somewhere in your deck.
We found, too, that, you know, you don't really see infinite combos on game nights very often, and that's sort of a conscious decision, because I think I like to see decks interact and have a chance to stop something if it's happening. And when something goes infinite, it kind of puts like a stamp on the game that's like, nope, that's it. Whereas there are some cases where a Torment of Hailfire isn't enough to knock someone out, and maybe they can just pull out Hail Mary, or they can, you know, Ultra of Dementia Josh to death. So there are ways to get out of that, but infinite combos, I think, sometimes are just a little too final
for me. So do you include infinite combos in your personal decks?
Not really, not anymore. There will be some decks that accidentally go infinite. You're just like, I just generated so much value, and oh my gosh, I'm infinite!
So like, you would include an infinite combo if it had like three or more cards in your deck that synergize together.
Yeah.
Then you're like, okay, going infinite. But if you're just like two card combos,
yeah,
you're not purposely into that.
Building them in, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's the power level for our play group. I have the same thing. I do have some decks that go infinite. When Kyle Hill or Cassius Marsh comes over, I definitely pull out my infinite combos. But for the most part, you know, I would rather have four or five cards synergize and go almost infinite and give me a lot of card advantage, because yep, that's kind of our power level.
Yeah.
You need to find out the power level for your play group, and you guys might be great for infinite combos, crush your opponents, or you might want something that's a little bit more slower, a little bit more game-ending card.
Yeah, or it takes four cards to get there. And if you do, I don't think anyone's going to get angry. Like, wow, you assembled a four-card combo that got you infinite. That took a lot. It's a lot of effort. That's a lot of hoops to jump through. Typically, if you have to jump through more than like two hoops to do something in Commander, it's getting a little slow.
Yeah. Need like three hoops. You got to hula hoop them a little bit.
Yeah. Okay.
Light them on fire.
All right. Now, this final category that we have is creatures that take over a game. So these aren't instant on the spot game enders, but they're cards that have such a big impact that they're just going to grind out a game of Commander for you and win it over time.
Yeah. We talked about Bolas's Citadel being kind of able to do that, to give us enough card advantage, enough mana advantage to be able to do that. So hopefully there could be some creatures out there that can simulate that.
It is a lot harder, though, as you wrote in the outline really aptly, to have a creature be your win condition sometimes. And why is that?
Because it's so vulnerable. There's so much efficient, strong creature removal that everyone is playing. It's very easy to be like, oh, that's what you're basing your whole strategy on? Kill it.
Ah.
Yeah. Especially if it's not something that immediately does something, because like immediately wins the game. It's something that gives you advantage over multiple turns, because not only is it susceptible to that instant speed like Kill It, it's also susceptible to board wipes, which are really ubiquitous. You see them all over the place.
Yeah, you see them all over the place, and people are going to be packing creature removal oftentimes above other types of removal. In general, the way that games are won in Commander are creatures hitting you for damage. And so these are the types of cards that we're going to talk about that are able to sort of push through those downsides and win you the game by grinding out a little bit more advantage than everyone else and being a little oppressive on the way there.
First up, as our example, we have the Scarab God. It's 3BB for a 5/5 legendary creature god. At the beginning of your upkeep, each opponent loses X life and you scry X, where X is the number of zombies you control. 2BB for an activated ability, exile target creature card from a graveyard, create a token that's a copy of it, except it's a 4/4 black zombie. And when the Scarab God dies, return it to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step.
Wow, that's a lot of text. Let's look at that last line first. When the Scarab God dies, return it to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step. This makes it an amazing commander because you're not paying commander tax, and it's very hard to get rid of. You have to be exiling it for it to go back to the command zone. Otherwise, this thing is going to go back to your hand, and guess what? You cast it again.
Yeah, that downside that you mentioned, that thing that makes all these vulnerable, yes, the Scarab God is still vulnerable to exile effects and some other things, but it's a little bit more resilient, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can maybe get it back again and have it still serve as that game ender.
And for 4 mana, 2BB, you're able to pull a card out of anyone's graveyard and make a token copy of it. You get the enter the battlefield effect. Oftentimes, 4/4 is big enough. You don't necessarily like need to have a bigger thing for it to be awesome.
Oftentimes, you know, the enter the battlefield effect is big enough too.
Yeah,
you know,
and
sometimes it's bigger. You know, you pay 4 mana, you get a 4/4 Solemn Simulacrum, and you're like, yes, please. You know, you get a 4/4 Mole Drifter, and you're like, thumbs up.
Yeah.
So the Scarab God basically gives you card advantage because you're pulling real relevant creatures from your opponent's graveyards. It gives you mana advantage because sometimes rarely is that 4 mana that far off from the original casting cost. And sometimes you can cheat something crazy big into play, you know, for just 4 mana. And it's somewhat resilient, and It drains your opponents and lets you scry, find other things in your deck to either protect the Scarab God or help close out that game.
Yeah, so Scarab God is, it's like everything you need in one card. This is just, you know, when people talk about pushed cards and how, like, these things are so much more powerful. You know, Sarah Angel used to be the best card in Magic the Gathering, right? Now look at cards like the Scarab God and ask yourself, wow, that thing definitely has the ability to go all the way. Okay, the card that I like that takes over the game is one that, again, was one of the very first decks I built because I learned about cheating a mana cost. And it was Avacyn, Angel of Hope. It's 5WW for an 8/8 legendary creature angel with flying, vigilance, and indestructible. Amazing. But also, other permanents you control have indestructible. This says no to board wipes for the most part across. And no, the regular creature removal, only exile effects can target this sort of stuff. And I used to cheat this out all the time with Kalia of the Vast because it's an angel. And getting this out with a Kalia is almost GG for opponents sometimes.
Yeah, so this, if we're talking about sort of the criteria that we're looking for, this not only gives this indestructible, but it kind of insulates the rest of your board so that you can continue pushing. You know what I mean? Like, so it bolsters everything that you already have and sort of gives that level of protection with indestructible.
Yeah, and not to mention Avacyn herself can fly for 8 in the air and be vigilant, so it's great at blocking. It's one of those cards that, if left alone, your entire board, if you want, you can swing out every turn, you can block anything you want, and you're, you know, if you're playing in the Kalia deck, that Kalia is very, very prime for removal. So that's one of those cards that, just over the course of the game, again, we've seen this with Scarab God, it is resilient to being taken out in multiple ways, and just has enough power and utility to close out the game, either with damage or value.
One thing that's interesting that you mentioned is that you liked its use case for cheating it out, in which case you are like cheating mana, essentially,
right,
which we identified as one of the more powerful things. But I think that what you're leaning for in this one is that, like, it really does insulate you from a lot of your opponent's interaction.
Yeah, right. The moment you play one of these cards that is able to take over a game, everyone's going to look at you and go, okay, well, we got to try and get rid of them now. And Avacyn is one of those cards that prevents a lot of those normal cases of people doing it.
It's interesting because almost every single one, we talk about this being like a 2-for-1, a 5-for-1, a 7-for-1. It feels like Avacyn is just like, it's just like, yep, I bring the big, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Avacyn comes to the party and everyone's like, this party just got way cooler because Avacyn's here. And yeah, that's all there is to it.
Yeah. Next up, you had a specific shout out, right?
Yeah, I wanted to shout out Jacob Bertrand because he decided to play this for game nights on the Kaldheim episode. And I didn't realize just how powerful of a commander this is, but this is 1000% a creature that completely takes over a game of commander.
Koma Cosmos Serpent is 3 green, green, blue, blue for a 6/6 legendary creature serpent. This spell can't be countered. At the beginning of each upkeep, create a 3/3 blue serpent creature token named Koma's Coil.
Goodness.
You can sacrifice another serpent to choose one. Tap target permanent. Its activated abilities can't be activated this turn. Or Koma Cosmos Serpent gains indestructible until end of turn.
Wow. Wow. So the things that we talked about earlier, this is resilient to removal. You can't even counter this darn spell. This serpent is coming in no matter what. Each upkeep, you're getting a 3/3, so you're insulating yourself from people attacking you to try and kill you. Mm-hmm. And then finally, your 3/3 is also turned into pseudo removal and protection for your commander. This card has everything.
That's great. 3/3s, especially on every single upkeep, those do end up being a card. I think, like, 2 3/3s are a very real card in Commander. 1 3/3, Beast Within, fine. But as soon as you're producing, like, multiple ones every single time around the table, yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, and I just love the fact that you can tap a permanent and stop its activated abilities from being activated. So that's another way to say, hey, you might have value over there, something kind of combo-y that's going on that could stop this. No, I have the equation to stop it every single time. And so I think it's similar to Consecrated Sphinx in that when you play it, all you have to do is pass the turn once, and you're probably going to get the value out of it that's going to make it worth it. In this case,
if Sphinx had some level of protection, it would be a game ender.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you would get so much advantage out of it that you'd be able to kill someone just from the cards you draw and this thing swinging in the air. Koma, in this case, by the time you pass the turn and you make that first serpent, you have protection for your commander. And that means every single opponent has to get through the fact that you're making a free 3/3 every single turn. So that is why this card just takes over a game. And you saw, right, when Jacob was able to make multiple copies of this, just how powerful it was and how I had to find 20 damage out of nowhere to try and kill him. There was no other way of me doing it.
So silly. I got a pretty similar card, actually. It's a Nezahal Primal Tide.
Ooh.
That's one of my favorites. It's 5 blue blue for a 7/7 legendary elder dinosaur. This spell can't be countered. So we have some similarities there too.
Yep.
You have no maximum hand size. Whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell, draw a card.
Oh my gosh.
Discard three cards, big cost. Exile Nezahal Primal Tide, return it to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. So let's unpack this dinosaur a little bit. First off, this spell can't be countered. You know, same thing with Coma. There are some metas where this is critical to having your game ending card happen. A lot of times, for a lot of these things that we've been talking about, you're sinking 10, 12, 15 mana into a spell. A counter spell is just devastating.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's huge. You know, you might be interested in Cavern of Souls or Beseju Shelters All if you are worried about counterspells, but it's nice having it on these creatures right here. So then Nezahal says you have no maximum hand size. That's going to be important because I plan on drawing a lot of cards.
And people plan on casting non-creature spells pretty often in Commander.
It just happens all the time. People cast non-creature spells, you draw that card. And so this is going to hopefully give me enough card advantage to sort of start taking over the game.
Yeah.
And attached to still a 7/7 dinosaur. But wait, it has a level of protection too. Anyone aims anything at it, anyone tries to board wipe even, like a board wipe doesn't even hit this, you can just discard three cards and then whoop, it's gone and it comes back into play.
Not to mention you're gonna draw the card when they board wipe, giving you more fire to discard.
Yes. Now, three cards is a lot. It's a hefty sum to pay. But I'm a big fan of Nezahal, and I think that I've seen it do a lot of really good work.
I like it a lot, too. I actually took it out of a deck and regretted it. People let me know in the comments, because this does have a lot of power.
Let me know in the comments.
This does feel a little more fair than a Coma Cosmos Serpent, but it's still very powerful, and in the right shells, will do a lot of work.
Also, I like that it's reprinted in about a dollar.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those, it's like the perfect spot, I think, for Commander cards. It's really fun, really big, and gets you that card advantage and can close out the game over time.
So, I mean, if we're talking about game-ending creatures, I think that we've hit on some of the more critical ones, but I think that we've sort of missed out on one category that we definitely need to talk about and discuss, and that's sort of the Eldrazi.
I
think that, like, across history and Commander, these Eldrazi have been the go-to big creatures to end games. And so I want to ask, kind of, well, how good are the Eldrazi? Are they the go-to creatures to end games? And why, you know, why didn't we pick them for our favorites?
So Eldrazi definitely are ways to end games. A lot of them have this very specific text on it that says Annihilator and then a number after it, which means that anytime that this creature attacks, the defending player sacrifices that many permanents. This is one of those just extremely feel bad moments, because let's say you only have 8 permanents on the battlefield and someone attacks you for Annihilator 4, you're getting rid of 4 of your things. You're just sacrificing them on the spot. And so Eldrazi have a lot going for them. They're usually typically very high mana cost, and they have big power and toughness, and then they have these crazy attack triggers or cast triggers that have huge impacts on the game.
Yeah,
so,
old school Kozilek and Ulamog, they are both Annihilator 4. That's a pretty big number for Annihilator. They both have cast effects, draw 4 cards or destroy a permanent. You know, so these are really big, and some of them are indestructible too.
Yeah.
So that level of protection is pretty good. One thing though is that I don't know if Annihilator might not be good enough.
There are definitely times when someone plays an Eldrazi that everyone goes, well, I don't want to get hit by the Annihilator. And so everyone has a shared interest in getting rid of that card. And Annihilator doesn't say lose the game, right? We talked about how Torment of Hailfire, if you have enough permanents, you're not super affected by it. Annihilator can have that same effect, but it's when Annihilator gets, you get hit by Annihilator twice or more than that. And then you're really starting to feel the pain, because now you're down so many permanents compared to your opponents. So that's when I think Annihilator gets really strong. But on just immediately getting hit by like Annihilator 2 isn't going to be enough to win, to lose most people games. And they're probably going to be at a healthy enough life total, or they can just chump block.
I also think that it depends on how much you're cheating these, because,
yeah,
you know, casting 10, 11, 12 damage or mana for one of these things, a lot of times at that stage in the game, maybe everyone's insulated from it. Everyone's kind of okay. But if you find ways to cheat these into play, if you sneak attack this into play and annihilate someone when they just have 5 things or 6 things, then they are out of the game for sure.
Yeah. So let's talk about 2 of the Eldrazi that we like that could maybe be considered on the game ending side that aren't sort of like your Kozilek, your big original Eldrazi. The first one is Void Winnower.
I would like, as Jimmy reads this, I'd like to have you guys think about every bad thing that he said about stacks earlier. and then Jimmy, go ahead, read
Void Winner. It's a 9-mana, 11-9, creature Eldrazi. Your opponents can't cast spells with even converted mana costs, including zero, so no mana crypts. And your opponents can't block creatures with even converted mana costs. You can't even. That's what people say about this card.
How dare you, Jimmy?
Look, they can cast odd mana costs, right? That sounds great. You know, just not even.
Obosh Dex Rejoice.
Yeah, right. So Void Winnow War, this is an over-the-top creature that can take over a game because it kind of stops other players from doing stuff, gives you the chance to cast any spell that you want. There are cards like Gaddic Teague that just completely shut down games for other players. And Void Winnow War does have that effect because technically it is stopping your opponents from casting 50% of the spells in Magic's history because they're even versus odd.
Yeah, I can see how that would be... Well, that could be game-ending in certain situations. In other situations, it's like... Oh, Swords to Plowshares.
Yeah.
Know what I mean? Or, you know, some other effect. I'm a big fan of It That Betrays, a 12-mana 11-11 Eldrazi. It has Annihilator 2. Not the most Annihilator out there. But whenever an opponent sacrifices a non-token permanent, put that card onto the battlefield under your control.
Holy moly. That applies to any time they sacrifice something.
Yeah, so I would much rather... attack with It That Betrays and steal two things from them, putting me up on the other two opponents I'm not attacking, rather than just having them annihilate four.
Yeah.
So that's something that I like. I also really like you cracked that fetch land? Yes, please.
Yes, please. Oh, you're an Aristocrats deck? Hope you're not sacrificing things everywhere because I'd like them too.
Neither one of these have Indestructible. Neither one of these have a way to dodge or, you know, get around anything else. I think that was something that we decided was critical in creatures, right? Mm-hmm. Like that are game enders.
Some
like,
amount of protection is really
some
important.
Some amount of protection to be a game ender. So I think that these, even though they are such powerful effects, end up being a tier below.
Yep, absolutely. I think they're on the way to being game enders. Now, obviously, the Eldrazi that do stay indestructible, I think are closer to being a game ender. But that's why Swords and Path to Exile are just such powerful cards. Because the ability to exile something is something that very few cards protect against. Hexproof is not a common keyword at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about game enders and what, you know, tier list they are essentially. I wanted to take a look at a game ender that Wizards of the Coast has used over and over and over again. In fact, it was included in Commander 2019, Game Night 2019, Commander 2020, and Commander 2021.
Wow.
Reprinted into Oblivion. It is 19 cents. It's
Xatalpa, Primal Dawn. It's another Elder Dinosaur similar to what we were talking about earlier with Nezahal. But this one, it's like Wizard's go-to. It's 6WW for a 4/8 legendary creature Elder Dinosaur with flying, double strike, vigilance, trample, indestructible. So it basically hits for 8. It will trample over. It's got vigilance. It's got indestructible. This qualifies as a game ender, I think, because of all the things we just said about, you know, Avacyn, Angel of Hope has a lot of similar things to this too.
Do you know what? I think so. I think that the one thing about Avacyn is that it helps protect the rest of your board, and the rest of your board is going to help you win the game. So that definitely puts Avacyn over the top, second level of protection. But Xatalpa protects itself pretty well. It does a lot of damage. It protects you from getting attacked. It could be a little bit of a game ender, but I think that what separates it from a lot of other cards that we talked about are does it generate more card advantage?
Yep.
Like we talk about the card advantage that you gain from this effect, and it doesn't. It's just its own big creature.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe the reason why Wizards likes putting them in these pre-cons is because losing to a Coma or a Scarab God or a Nezahal or an Avacyn actually feels kind of bad sometimes because it limits. They're so good at ending the game that it limits your ability to stop them. Whereas with Xatalpa, it's a timer. It's a clock. You know you're going to get hit for 8 in the air every single time. You know how much life you have left. But it's not, you're going to get hit for 8 in the air. Anything you try to do to stop it is going to get them drawing a card, or they're going to keep tapping down your permanents because of their serpents they're making, or they're going to get so much value off the Scarab God, off the things in your graveyard, right? Those all add on the whole, like, it's protected and it generates tons of value and kills you. So I think this fits right in that nice range of, like, power level 6 to 7. Can kill you, can end the game, but isn't oppressive in a way.
Yeah, and I think that old commander decks, because I went through some of the old pre-constructed decks, the things that Wizard says, like, hey, this is a good game ender, and some of them were really clunky. Like, you know, there was Stormherd existed, you know,
a 10-mana
spell that created Pegasus is equal to your life total. This crazy game ender, like Army of the Damned or something like that.
Right.
Things that could win the game, but like, a board wipe could just like, mm-hmm. also just like deal with it or something like that.
Yeah, summoning sickness too, obviously important. Yeah. Or Army of the Damned to come in tap,
exactly.
Right?
But recently we've seen some cards like the Locust God was printed in a deck.
Yeah.
Like that's for sure a game ender and really powerful. I mean, it's from the same cycle as the Scarab God. You know what I mean? It has that redundancy too. Villainous Wealth was printed. I don't know if those decks, the pre-constructed decks can capitalize on the mana production you need to get up to Villainous Wealth style mana, but that was reprinted. We shouted out Surge to Victory,
mm-hmm.
like, and that was in a pre-constructed deck. So I think that Wizards is sort of touching on some of these game ending type effects, but maybe making them a little bit more fun.
Yeah, I think fun is the key word here. And keep in mind that the pre-cons are typically balanced against each other. So a Villainous Wealth in a pre-con deck versus another pre-con deck,
oh, totally
is
fair.
Not going to be yeah. bad compared to that against like a Kyle Hill deck or even a DJ deck, right?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think when it comes to designing these cards and making them right, it can be a danger to just make too many game enders that are too powerful and just are just like when they land, you're like, ugh.
Because when do you want your game to end? We talked about it being important to have game enders
yeah.
to end a game. But if you have these game enders that just are really difficult to deal with, they come down super early, like turn six or something like that, that is game warping. It's meta warping.
Yeah, why do you think we don't see cards like Kozilek anymore? Like that card is just so brutally powerful with Annihilator 4 and its body and if it gets cheated out. Mm-hmm. But we still do get cards like Koma, which makes me a little curious because Koma, it says so much on it and has so many different ways where you can't interact with it, and it's so many ways to shut down the game that almost makes me wonder, is this better than Kozilek? Why are we seeing Koma get printed still?
I think I might take a Koma over a Kozilek.
I think so
decks.
Too. I mean,
just mana cost alone, I can hard cast a Koma like seven. So by the way, seven mana for Koma. That's
not impossible.
Yeah, that is easy to ramp into, but it's not coming down early. It's still an expensive card.
Yeah.
Overall, I think that finding your own game enders is really important. Go through mm-hmm. your commander decks, take a look and say, how am I ending this game? Don't oversaturate your deck with too many big splashy spells, but commander is the place to do these fun effects, to play with elder dinosaurs,
yeah.
to smash into people, to annihilate your friends.
And more importantly, do it in a way that you enjoy the most, or you want to test out and say, hey, do I like winning games this way? Because I've cast Triumph of the Hordes a lot of times, and I'll say this now, it's not my favorite way to win the game anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I have actually taken Crater Hoof Behemoth out of a lot of decks because I don't want to just have that same play pattern where you play it and blammo, you win the game, you get the trample, you're in for it, and you're done. That to me says, okay, cool, you've done this enough times. Maybe it's time to look into a Scarab God type win.
Yeah.
Maybe you want to challenge yourself with Approach of the Second Sun. There are a lot of different ways for you to express yourself in Magic, and game ending is 100% one of those ways.
I also think the one thing that you obviously have to look at is price tags for some of these.
Yeah.
Because we've talked about some cards here very casually that are favorites that are $25, $30 or something like that. And actually, I think if we were to take the average price of all the cards that we talked about, it's going to actually be kind of an expensive card.
Yeah.
Just know that out there are game enders that are very reasonably priced. You know, I mentioned Nezahal is one of my favorites.
Yep.
And that's, you know, under $2.
Revel in Riches isn't crazy priced either. I mean, and like, if you think about what I did with Magda, right? Like I found a way to kill everyone with Dragon Damage or Altar of Dementia. You can find ways to mill people out, right? There are other ways to win the game. Sometimes it's not just about these big game ending cards. You could be the kind of strategy that likes to grind out that attrition based game, or you could be the kind of person that just wants to put a really cool creature on the board and have that carry you to victory. So definitely ask yourself, right? Are you a spells kind of person, a creatures kind of person? What makes you happy? What makes you filled? How do you want to do that photo finish as you cross the finish line and you the ribbon is bursting across your chest? What do you want that to look like? Make that your game ender, and I think that's going
to
be a lot of fun.
Surge to victory.
Yeah, surge to victory. Literally, right? That feels perfect for you, DJ. That feels perfect.
I love it. All right. So what we want you to tell us is, what is your favorite game ending card? Pull your deck out, get your best game ender that you're in there, and leave it down in the comments because
yeah.
we want to read about it. And also everyone else in the comments wants to see your awesome game ender and say, oh, ho, ho, I want to put this card in my deck.
Yeah, maybe it's like Door to Nothingness, like that card is crazy if you can play it. All right. Of course, make sure you go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone if you want to buy any of these cards, pick up these singles, and add a game ender to your deck as long as it's not stacks. Don't buy Decree of Annihilation. Don't even, I didn't even say that name. You don't.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't even mention that in the outline, and you're
here
like,
I am
no,
talking
not
about
gonna
it.
Say Decree of
shout out. No. But that's okay because you might be the only person buying it, and thus cardkingdom.com/commandzone is your place to go. Another way to end the game is by winning it before it even starts, and that's by showing up with the coolest playmat in the house with the coolest deck box and the coolest sleeves and the coolest dice, because everyone's going to go, woo, snap, you're so cool, I don't even want to play, because you've just won the style game. That's the game ender I'm looking for. Check out Ultra Pro product at your LGS or over at cardkingdom.com/commandzone. And hey, we're on the end step, DJ. But I think we can actually do one today.
We can actually talk about an end step. Imagine that. All right. So, Jimmy, there is a lot of entertainment out there
Indeed.
In the world. You know what I mean? And sometimes it's actually really interesting when you stumble on something that is totally popular and a known thing that has multiple seasons mm-hmm. in another country.
Oh,
but like you've okay. never, but you've like never heard of it before.
Right.
So I ran into this show called Taskmaster.
Okay.
Have you heard of it before?
No, I don't think so. What country is it from?
It's from the UK.
Okay.
And the premise of the show is they get five comedians, you know, and these are just like goofy, by the way, these are people that you might vaguely know because you've watched some British television.
Some sitcom.
But yeah, I didn't immediately know exactly who all of them are.
Yeah.
But they're like just kind of funny comedians, and then they have these ridiculous tasks that they have to accomplish. So one of them could be like, and there's usually like different lateral ways of thinking and stuff like that. So
oh,
it's just like,
okay. So it's like actually kind of gamified.
Yeah, it's definitely in like, and there's some, it's very arbitrary about how the points are awarded and stuff like that.
Oh, but, okay. So but it's, honestly, it's silly and it's fun.
Yeah. But like, for example, they'll be like, you know, make the highest tower with just stuff in this room.
Oh.
You have 10 minutes. Your time starts now. You know, here blindfolded, you have to try these different yogurts and tell us what flavor it is.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Except
okay.
It's just
so
like,
it really
oh,
does span the
this,
spectrum there.
This one is baby food. this one is toothpaste.
Ew. Okay.
And really it just spans all this stuff, and honestly it's just really fun to see funny people in yeah. these weird quirky situations. And I was just amazed that it's just like, I talked to some people and they're like, oh yeah, it's like it's run 10 seasons, like it's super popular. You know what I mean? And I'm like, what is this thing? And by the way, the thing that I really like is that you can watch whole seasons on YouTube. It's just there.
Perfect.
You know what I mean? So,
and it's free, so that means you can watch it too right after this by looking up Taskmaster. Yeah, but before Taskmaster, you do that, subscribe to this channel. Click that notification bell. Head on over to Jumbo Commander. Subscribe to that channel. Hit that notification bell. And then maybe you won't need to watch Taskmaster because your task
you just have so much content.
Is, yeah, to enjoy our content first. That's great. I love discovering shows like that too. That's like fun. Or sometimes you'll come upon it on Netflix or whatever. And you're like, what is this? And yeah. you watch it and you're like, wow,
here's
this
thing,
is cool.
If you're not sure that you like the show, they have these little clips for a single task. So you can just watch a single funny task with people that you've never heard of before. And you're just like 8 minutes long and you're like, oh my gosh, they have to like construct a bridge that supports their weight. Like, you know what I mean? And they're like putting wheelbarrows. So yeah, it's crazy. So
yeah.
So
and maybe you'll see a celebrity name that you know, or a famous British comedian that you've always wanted to see in a silly Taskmaster scenario.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Thanks for that, DJ. Cleanup time. Big thanks to our amazing team here at the Command Zone. That is Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Alfred the Saga, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Arthur Meadowcroft, Sam Walder, Gaurav Galati, and Dan Sheehan. Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer. He does the Living Cards animation that start our show on YouTube and sometimes live behind us here on set. You can always find Jeffrey at Living Cards MTG. Thanks, everyone. Thanks so much. DJ, we've had quite a lot of recording, but I think this is one of my more favorite episodes. I love talking about winning the game because who doesn't love winning?
I love it. I love winning it in interesting ways like this. So.
Interesting, fun ways.
Yeah.
Hopefully you can too. Talk to you all soon. We will see you next time.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.